We'd all like to reduce the cost of bills, electricity, gas, all of that. But my next guests have taken to the next level in their attempt to live, quote, off the grid and generate their own electricity. I'm joined in studio by Steve Golomboski Byrne of Lacken Cottage Farm in the Mourne Mountains, Dr. Sarah Miller, CEO of the Rediscovery Centre in Ballymun, and Quentin Gargan, whose business is renewable energy. I'm going to start with you, Steve, if I may. Tell us about the cottage you live in.
Well, Marion, and thanks for having me on.
A pleasure.
We live in a restored...
Can I get you to move in just a little closer?
We live in a restored sort of 1840s cottage that we've kind of brought up to standard, insulated it, and we've extended it using kind of natural building, so straw bale, green roof extension.
And when you say green roof, growies?
Turf roof.
Yeah.
And I live there with my wife, Claire, and my daughter, Lyra. And we also have a second cottage that we rent out for holidays. And we have run courses, people come to visit.
But give me the background. You started off in a horse box.
We did. We lived in a horse box before we, before we came here.
Really salubrious.
It's bigger than it sounds.
How did that come about?
Well, we were renting, and we already owned a horse box. We had horses, had a couple of horses, and the truck had been off the road for years, and it was sitting in a barn, parked on a friend's farm, and our rent came up for renewal, and actually Claire said, could we, you know? So we thought we were looking for somewhere to live.
Yeah.
That we'd fit it out, and we would give it a year.
Convert the box,
save some money, and see how we went.
Right.
And we did.
Yeah. And how was that?
It was fine, actually.
Did you have electricity there?
We had, we had some solar panels and some batteries to give us power, so it wasn't completely, you know, we weren't on candles or anything.
Right, okay. So, and then your wife became pregnant and the nurse thought you were nuts, I gather.
Yes, well, we looked around for a place to buy and we found this sort of derelict cottage and we moved the truck. So the idea was we would live in the truck while we did the house up.
Right.
And yes, we had 16 weeks to do the house and the midwives would turn up and look in horror at this derelict cottage and go again. And we kept saying, I said, yeah, be ready, you know, we were just ready.
Well, that's all good. And that kind of set in stone, if you'll pardon the term, your decision on energy, how you would generate energy, growing your own, all of that.
Yes, well, living in the truck was kind of was a way of experimenting. You know, yeah. We wanted to see, is this really something we're going to do long term? And by the time we got into the house, then we made that decision for sure that we were going to go down that route.
Yeah, I'll come back to you on the details of it because people think you're wonderful and they think they'd love to do it themselves, but it's not as easy as it sounds, I don't think anyway. Quentin Gargan, tell me your scale on this department.
Well, it's a bit similar. We built a straw bale house, the green roof, and to power it. I mean, I was always concerned about the environment and particularly climate change and looking for ways of creating a sort of a comfortable sustainability model. So I put a 2.5 kilowatt wind turbine, which cost a fortune, and some solar panels.
What brought wind to your attention?
Well, initially, actually, I lived with a wind turbine on a boat sailing the Caribbean, you know. And
right, a windy day. As you would, yeah.
So you were depending for cold beer on a windy day. So, yeah, we put in a wind turbine and some solar panels. Now, I mean, all of this technology was terribly expensive at the time, and so there were quite small systems that went.
So the notion that you're saving money is for the birds?
Well, certainly it was back then. I mean, I think that there's been some game-changing technologies, particularly in solar PV now, that actually it washes its face fairly comfortably.
So how much did the turbine cost you?
The turbine cost about 20,000. That wouldn't be any cheaper today. It'd be the same today. But the big...
It's a lot of capital, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, I figured at the time that the payback time in that was about 75 years.
Right.
But you see, electricity, if you want clean electricity, you know, to my mind, we have climate targets to meet. Ireland is a laggard. And here's a simple thing that you can do. It's not going to cost you. It massively reduces your carbon footprint, is rolling out solar PV. Right. I mean, the panels we bought at the time were €7 a watt. They're now 35 cents. That's how much this...
A watt. Yeah. So that is such a reduction. You really had problems, didn't you, also, with batteries? Which of you had the battery problem?
Well, I think I particularly had battery problems. I found that it was always either a feast or a famine, and we were either dumping surplus electricity or else we were running around watching the washing piling up and wondering could we leave the fridge on, you know? So,
right.
So, I mean, in 2007 or 2008, Electric Ireland introduced a scheme that we could sell our surplus electricity to the grid and get paid for it, and I jumped on that scheme.
What a good idea, yeah.
Now, that scheme was closed down a little while afterwards, which is a terrible shame.
Why?
I think it was closed down because other electricity providers didn't provide the same service, and it was costing the ESB, Electric Ireland,
yeah,
and other providers weren't matching it. So they closed it down to new entrants. I'm still on it, so I'm still getting paid for exporting electricity to the grid. But
so if you're presumably your solar panels are best in the summer, and your turbine is what you depend on in the winter, would that be correct?
Pretty much. Being able to import and export and not worry, you know, as long as it's working out that we're balancing as sort of carbon neutral, then, you know, I'm happy with that.
Right. And if you have a surplus, do you let it go off on the day, or do you still put it into batteries to store it?
I keep some batteries for a rainy day when the grid goes down because it's a windy and storm prone area of the country, but no, I let it go immediately. So, I mean, right now, this minute, I looked at my phone on the way in here, and there's about a kilowatt of solar being produced, and that's going to the grid. There's about 400 watts of wind energy that's going to the grid. So at the moment, I'm exporting because I'm not at home.
It sounds like magic in some ways. And what kind of money do they pay you for it?
They pay 9 cents, and they charge me 17 cents to buy it back. So,
oh, right. Yeah.
But, you know, there are new technologies coming on stream. For example, there's hybrid inverters that you know, bring down the price of all of this technology. And you can have a battery. You can use it to buy cheap electricity at night and use it during the day. And you can use it to store your solar electricity right during the day and use it during the night.
When you were dealing with your batteries, how much were they costing you?
I think the last set of batteries cost me €2,400. And they only lasted about 2-3 years. I mean, the lead-acid batteries that we were using also aren't very effective in this. Again, that's all changed. The lithium-ion batteries that they're using in mobile phones and that they're using now for so many other purposes are very efficient right at storing electricity, and they last 10 years.
Oh, you know, right. So that's a different kettle of fish.
Totally yeah, different area.
You also drive an electric car.
Yeah, I think I had the first electric car in Ireland in recent times. On my third one now. I had an electric car in 1991.
You were on the news together.
Yeah, that's right. Tony...
as a phenomenon.
It was quite a phenomenon back there, you know.
And how do you... You're in Cork, aren't you? Cork-based?
I'm down in Bantry.
Bantry, yeah. So how do you... This is what everybody asks about electric. What kind of distances do you get?
Well, in the country, an electric car is for two-car families, you know. The long trips
right
happen in the dirty diesel, I'm afraid.
But and the surprising short trips.
All the short trips.
Oh, that's an interesting thing, yeah. Because, I mean, a lot of people in cities still have two cars, which seems kind of perhaps a bit unnecessary, but between school runs and work and all of that. But one of each, at least, would give you the option around the city not to... not to use the dirty car.
Well, again, this is improving. My first car had a range of 28 miles. My
Holy
second car had a
God
range of 40. And this one has a range of 70 or so. But if I was buying a new car now, it would have a range of 300 kilometres. And it's improving all the time.
Right. Sarah, let me come to you. How did you start out and what are you doing?
Okay, so thanks very much for having me on the show.
Pleasure.
I suppose I'm the CEO of the Rediscovery Centre. So it's a really interesting community initiative in Ballymun. So if you know the area, if you're coming from the M50 and driving towards Ballymun town, on the left-hand side, you'll see a big chimney, 80-metre chimney, and that's where the Rediscovery Centre is.
That was the old heating system.
That's right. It was the boiler house for Ballymun. So it used to produce all the hot water and it pumped all the cold water to the flats when they were in place.
Right.
So it was set up in the 1960s.
And some of those flats, when you went into them, you'd be boiling.
Yeah.
They were unbelievably
warm. And people, you know, talk about how comfortable they were, how beautiful it was to live
big,
in them,
yeah,
and drying their clothes on the floor and all of these types of stories. But I guess as part of the regeneration, this heating system was no longer necessary. The flats had been knocked down. The building itself was due for demolition, but now it's completely been reimagined as the Rediscovery Centre. It's our headquarters now for all of our activities. We've been operating in Ballymun since 2004.
Doing what?
So we have a number of activities. We run four social enterprises, Rediscover Furniture. So
Rediscover Furniture?
Yeah.
Use old furniture?
Basically, yeah. So we take old furniture that people no longer want, we restore it, we upcycle it, we make it very unique and beautiful, and then we sell it back to the public.
Okay. And what else?
Rediscover Fashion.
Fashion.
So this is where we take old fabrics, textiles, clothing.
Yeah, we
and
were
turn
talking about that recently. Some of them are beautiful and
gorgeous.
They're good quality.
Beautiful quality and you know, long lasting. So that's Rediscover Fashion. Then we have Rediscover Paint.
Now that I don't understand. What do you do? Take it off the wall?
No, we take it. So most people in Ireland will have about 10 litres of paint at least, or 10 pots of paint in their at home in their garages. What they tend to do with it is they bring it to the recycling centres. And we have a relationship with recycling centres and with the local authority to take that leftover water-based emulsions. We take it back to our centre, we clean it, we re-blend it, we mix it and we sell it to the public. So it's a wonderful system, because if we didn't take it, it would be going to Germany to be incinerated. But instead, we're able to take that non-hazardous element, recycle it, sell it back into the community and get it recirculated
again.
And
the fourth one?
And then the fourth one is Rediscover Cycling. So similar model, we take old bicycles that people no longer want and we rebuild them and basically restore them back to their former glory, and we sell them back to the public, and then we use that money to provide training and employment opportunities for people in the area who have been long-term unemployed and give them an opportunity to get back into work. And it's about 90% of the people that we work with go on to full-time employment or education. So it's very successful.
Where did the genesis of the idea, where did it come from?
So I think initially the idea came from the fact that people were moving from the high rise into low density housing. So they came from this system where, as you said, you know, they were living in beautiful, warm accommodation, but they had no control over that heating. So when it got too warm,
people would open the windows. Yeah.
So it was highly inefficient. But also it took the control away from the actual consumer. So people were being given heat, whether they wanted or not. Mm. Same with their waste management services. So there was one central chute and all of the waste went into that. So recycling wasn't happening. So when people were moving from the high-rise into their homes, there was an opportunity for environmental organisations like ourselves to work with Ballymun Regeneration to provide, I suppose, knowledge and expertise on how people can
use their homes.
Even things like having a garden for the first time, or having to deal with your energy bills, or what went into the recycling bin and what doesn't, and how do you do home compost. So we got involved in that type of activity, and that was all funded under the Ballymun Regeneration Programme.
I remember also there were terrible criticisms of the flats in Ballymun that they had been just built without insulation. So all that heat was not only going out the window, it was going out the walls as well. But they seem to have done a super job there. Do you think it has been a success in terms of people's satisfaction?
Seems to be. Obviously, you know, we work a lot with people who are part of that regeneration. A lot of our employees and trainees are from the local area, and they're all very happy with the way that it's worked out. They have beautiful homes with beautiful gardens and, you know, very energy efficient buildings. And, you know, they have responsibility now for how they live and how they choose to consume.
Yeah. Well, I hope it goes well for them. So you say you're a not-for-profit, but it is a business.
Absolutely, yeah. So we still have to pay the bills at the end of the day, and we have to pay salaries. And
in terms of what the two gentlemen were talking about, where do you get your electricity? Where do you get your water? There was some detail of it that was a little off-putting, shall we say.
Okay. I'm not sure what you're talking about. It might be our wastewater treatment system, perhaps. But, so I suppose because of our activity and because of what we do, we were very keen to make sure that the centre itself was an exemplar when it came to wastewater treatment, you know, energy efficiency and our electricity consumption. So
and
we set
toilets.
About And toilets, yes. Well, you're very keen to talk about our toilets. So, yeah, we have a really interesting wastewater treatment system. I think lots of visitors to the centre are kind of taken aback by the way we manage our wastewater in the building. We have composting toilets, which is nothing new, and they're flushed using rainwater, which, again, is nothing necessarily new. We have, however, a system which uses the solid waste from the toilets through a wormery. So we have worms who are very active in the building, actively decomposing all of the solid waste that goes from our toilets into our carousel, which then breaks it down into a beautiful compost, and that compost then can be used for land cover and used on land. We also separate the urine out, and that's used in a living wall. So
now that was the bit I thought of. Does that not stink?
No, not in the slightest. No, so it's diluted and it is pumped up through a hydroponic system, and the liquid then is used to grow beautiful nutrient-rich plants. So they're being provided with all this nitrate and phosphorus, and they're very healthy. And they're obviously helping, you know, with the building, and they look beautiful. And it's a really interesting point as well, because people can get to see how you make this lovely, you know, green wall. But at the same time, then when those plants are dying, you have this nutrient rich material, which can then be composted.
All right. You do something similar, don't you?
We have a grey water treatment system, yes, smaller scale. And also we have composting toilets as well. And everyone who comes, everyone loves composting toilets. There's a national fascination with what happens in composting toilets.
And do you use what comes out, you know, for your vegetables?
We don't use it for vegetables. We do put it on, we've a lot of trees, we've a big tree planting program, and we would use it on the trees and some of the fruit trees.
Yeah.
But not directly on the vegetables.
And what, tell me the scale of your vegetables now. Are you nearly self-sufficient?
No, we're partly sufficient. We've about half an acre of growing space.
Yeah.
And we produce quite a lot of our food sometimes of the year, but we're not really trying to be self-sufficient in food.
Right. Your mother-in-law, was it, or your mother, begged you to get a kettle?
My mother begged us to get a kettle, yeah. So we cook on a range. We've got a wood-fired range. And, in the early days, we were quite hardcore.
Right.
We had very few appliances, and she came, and it was quite warm, I think, and she just wanted a cup of tea. And I said, give me 20 minutes, I'll light the fire. Yeah.
Right.
And she disappeared and came back the next day and just said, you know, just put this on, would you? Which makes sense when we have the power. At the time,
yeah.
I think we didn't really have the power, but we, you know.
So how do you go about your power now?
So we have about 4.5 kilowatts of solar, and we've a 3.5 kilowatt wind turbine. And we have batteries.
How much did the wind turbine cost you?
The wind turbine, we've been very lucky. Like, our solar panels came off a church in Belfast.
Right.
Who were getting new ones.
Oh, and they gave them away.
And they were, sitting on a pallet, wondering what to do with them. So we took those. And the wind turbines, similarly, I was doing some work for someone, and I was sitting there in the shed, and I always ask people, I'm very bad at just saying, do you want that? And I swapped it for something. We bought the mast, and we bought all the control kits, so it's cost considerably less than buying a new one would.
Right. Do you have to be very handy and mechanical to do all these things?
Well, I am fairly handy and mechanical, but I think a lot of people find that I wouldn't necessarily encourage them to go and put their own wind turbine up.
Yeah.
But they're very... It's confidence, you know, with a lot of people. Once they've tried something, then they'll go on and do more. So it's just giving them that opportunity.
Quentin, has your philosophy changed? Like, at one stage, you were kind of gung-ho, or as Steve said, hardcore. But you're not now? That's a question, not a statement.
No, I was running courses and showing people our compost toilet and all that sort of stuff too. And I realised it was a bridge too far for most people. And actually, to be honest, it was a bridge too far for me. I mean, I think, you know, we need to change how we're using energy and where we're getting our energy from. And Ireland is a laggard in this. And we're, you know, one of only four countries in Europe not going to meet our targets. But it has to be easy that people can put solar panels on a roof, they can fit something, not have to do a degree in science or engineering to know how it works, and that it works by itself. And
well, as you were describing, say, your difficulty with batteries, most people having heard that would say, good night, good luck, goodbye, but I can't be handling that.
Yes, but now there are very good and efficient plug-and-play systems for solar and batteries that, you know, you could fit to any house, anybody, well, provided you've a decent south-facing roof or something like that.
And how much, say, for a three-bedroomed, ordinary house, now, not a minuscule house, but not a large house, how many panels would you need to do what?
Well, if you'd need about 16 panels to offset your electricity consumption in total, and you wouldn't be able to use the electricity from those 16 panels, you know. But if you put in a 10-panel system in a battery, you'll use most of the electricity produced by storing some of it in the battery.
Right.
And there's very generous grants for this at the moment. I mean, the grants pay about 2/3 of the cost of the hardware. So you're paying for a third of the hardware plus the installation.
Yeah, that's very attractive.
No, SEII, last October, they introduced very generous grants for solar photovoltaic systems for residential use.
And the voltaic systems seem to be a step up from the ones that were there before?
The technology, I mean, there's one company makes a panel a second that we deal with, you know. They make 30 million panels a year. You know, it's moved into such a massive scale now. And this has been driven on by other countries rolling out, you know, big solar and industrial rooftop solar, particularly, and all of that.
I know that, because it surprised me that you couldn't sell into the grid here now, because they're really encouraging it in other European countries. I know somebody who has a stack of them in their garden in Italy, and like with sunshine, oh, blooming day, it's unreal. I was asked to ask you, human beings might mean very well, but if you have the public going in and out, how do you get them not to keep the lights on, not to keep the tap running, all that kind of thing?
Well, our building, I suppose, has been designed with that in mind. It's a demonstration centre, so we want people to come along and see what kind of energy-efficient technologies and renewable technologies are at play. So in terms of turning on the lights, our lights are occupancy lit, so they only come on when you walk into the room, and they'll only come on if it's dark enough for you to need lights. So we take that element out of it. It knows. It's very clever. So we have kind of a smart system and a building management system. We do a lot of work with behaviour change. I suppose that's one of our main objectives, is to really get people thinking about their own impact, and also to give them access. So it's almost like the entire building is an educational tool. So give them access to see what technologies are like when they're actually operating, see what you can do at home on a small scale, and basically give people that opportunity to ask the questions.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of interesting materials. So for example, the building itself, even in the construction materials, our walls are made from hempcrete. It's the first time that's ever been done in a public building.
Which is
a mixture of hemp and lime.
Right.
So it's a breathable, natural material. It's great for air quality purposes. So within our building, we have, you know, about 500 monitors monitoring everything from air quality to water use. But it's able to tell us how clean our air is. And a lot of that is because we have this, you know, continual source of clean air coming in through the building.
And is that an insulator as well?
It's not in our building. It's actually the fabric of the wall. But hemp can be used as an insulating material as well. In our building, where we have insulation, we use sheep's wool. So that's another interesting kind of material that people use. We've also, obviously, the building itself was a retrofit. So it was the old Ballymun Boiler House. We transformed it. We couldn't really change the building, but we kept all the original concrete and all the original steel. So that meant that we weren't putting in so many heavy embodied carbon materials.
Yeah.
So that was a great win for us, having the building already. And then I suppose it's all about the systems in place. So those, you know, interactive and kind of clever wastewater treatment systems. We have a reed bed system. We, you know, do rainwater harvesting.
Where did you get the money to do all this?
Well, it was an interesting project. The building itself was going to be knocked down, and the government had about 800,000 that they were going to spend knocking it down. We approached Dublin City Council and talked to them about the idea of bringing all of our operations under one roof. We'd been operating in Ballymun since 2004, so we wanted to bring all of the activities, all the educational activities and all the social enterprises together under one space.
So did they give you the 800,000?
They gave us the 800,000. We went to Europe and got 1.8 million from Europe through their Environmental Life programme, which is essentially a programme which enables you to put in practice demonstration projects that have a real positive impact on the environment, so that other people can learn from those. So we got the bulk of the money from the European programme. We got a little bit of money from the Department of, well, a significant amount of money from the Department of the Environment and from the Department of Housing as well, and Dublin City Council. So between the entire collaboration, we had about 3.6 million.
Oh, that's a nice
to create. It was great, to create this centre.
Okay, nice to hear Steve chatting. We've been living off-grid in Leitrim. for the past 19 years, we also help others by occasionally teaching build your own wind turbine workshops. Marion, I'm not sure that living off the grid is for us ordinary folk who haven't pennies to rub together. It appears to be for well-heeled people with money to burn on idealism. That's a very fair point.
I think it's absolutely fair, but things have changed since then. But, you know, certainly even under the grant system where you can put solar PV on your own roof, getting the money to do that and borrowing that money is still a stretch for a lot of people.
It sure is. You know? And we were talking about hybrids and electric cars here last week on the Sunday programme. And people kind of getting cross and saying, grand if you have the money, but if you haven't the money, you can't be doing this.
But I think people who, you know, people like us who could afford to do it as pioneers, we created the beginnings of a market. And over time, the only reason why solar panels are affordable now is because so many of them are being made. But the early adopters put money in their pockets to experiment with these technologies. And, I think it was an interesting, look, other people spend more money on their cars. During all that time I was driving around a 12-year-old car that was falling apart, you know, other people would have bought a BMW, you know, in my position. So
right.
I spent my money on this instead and
okay.
I enjoyed it.
Every home should have a battery storage system to tide them over for a few hours in the event of power failures. What do you think?
Well, certainly, if you do put in a PV system that, you know, that feeds batteries, you have the benefit that if there's something, you can run your fridge and your freezer and even your central heating for a period of time.
Yeah.
I mean, that is...
How long with a piece of string?
There's a technicality. I mean, you could continue to run them on the solar panels, but there's a technicality with firefighting switches, firefighter safety switches. You don't want to go into it.
No,
but
I don't.
To resolve that.
But if anybody's putting them in, you do.
But it would be possible to continue to run right. continuously on a reduced amount of electricity from the sun during the power cut.
The weather has been remarkable this winter. Now, we said that last winter as well. But it's been warm, but it's been very calm and dark. How are you functioning?
Just. This time of year is always a bit hit and miss, and we've sort of tightened our belts. We're kind of used to it. So we just use very little.
Right.
And like today, there's been a bit of wind and it's picked things up and it's got us through.
Well, there's obviously doing more wind down in West Cork than you are.
And more in sun the mountains. As well. I had a look too before I came in and it definitely wasn't as sunny where I came from.
Right.
Something else I would say, someone was saying there about the cost. And how, you know, going to be well healed. I would say that although we have been lucky to some extent and we've picked up stuff along the way, we've also used lots of second-hand stuff. I mean, our budget for doing our house and fitting it out has been absolutely minuscule by most people's standards. Our original budget for sorting ourselves out and getting in and was about £15,000.
For the whole house?
To get it from derelict to sort of a condition where we could live in it.
Right.
By using old stuff and recycling and upcycling and, you know. So, you know, you can do it if you're not in a hurry on a lower budget, and that's what we've done.
Right.
You know, we would do what we can and replace it later.
Would you think the average listener here would find your living as comfortable as their living?
Yes. I think they probably would. I think they would find it slightly different.
All of you would agree on that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
you're a Green too, aren't you? You ran for office at one stage.
I did run for West Cork, but I would be a supporter of all sorts of green movements and environmental matters, yeah.
Okay, listen, we'll leave it there. Dr. Sarah Miller, Quentin Gargan and Steve Byrne.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.